Welcome to another episode of the Courage to Be the Difference podcast brought to you by Business Victories. I'm your host, Sherry Ruskus. Our goal in bringing you these words each week is to focus on that special element of courage, to give you what we like to think of as a cup of courage each week in small proven doses from myself as well as from my guests that I have the honor of interviewing, and I am really excited about our guest today, Mr. Andrew Newman, who is the author and founder of Conscious Stories, which is an organization that is dedicated to changing the last 20 minutes of a child's day and further changing their mindset and life because of it. And Andrew, well, let me share this too, just a little bit about, because I'm so excited. I have so many questions for you, Andrew, as we go here. But I want to let our audience know that that you have you've used your background in therapeutic healing work and create these beautifully illustrated children's books. I was going through them yesterday afternoon and just totally mesmerized that each have a deep intentional message behind it. And these books take the parents reading it along with the child to a calmer, happier place. That's your goal with all of this. And again, they're just beautiful storybooks and add a strong mindful thinking, such as the one I really loved yesterday was The Hug Who Got Stuck, was a beautiful one. So thank you for joining us today, Andrew.
My pleasure, Sherry. Thanks for having me.
So tell me, what I love the most about the project of yours is this idea that came to you as ideas come to us, right? As entrepreneurs, we get these ideas, but the majority in my work with small businesses, the majority of people don't bring their ideas to life, and you brought this idea to life. So I would love for you to share with our audience right out of the gate here, what was the courage, what was the drive, the passion maybe even behind you that made you bring this to life? And when did that happen?
Yeah, so there's a couple of elements to this. One of them is my simple creativity. And that the first story that I wrote, I had no idea about building a business. I was writing in my journal, I wrote a poem, and the poem needed some pictures. And I had a friend who was an illustrator. So we just jumped into that together and we created this book called A Little Light. It didn't do very much. And it, you know, about 4 years later, I had the same experience. And I thought, oh, well, I know somebody else who can draw it. And so I was in the process of trusting each of my own creative impulses at that stage. And I think that for many, even that's an act of courage, just to let the first breath of creativity to live unedited, not knowing what it'll become, not knowing where it'll go. And having fun with it, because it's a pleasurable process making something. At a later stage, when I had four books that weren't really coherent, but kind of looked the same, I thought, what am I doing with these and who are they for?
And what was the drive that kept you from book one that did okay, but nothing spectacular? What kept you going through all of it?
Well, at that stage, it was a hobby. It was a sideline hobby, and it was something that my writing was happening because I liked writing. And every now and again, I wrote something that seemed to be more of a story than my daily ramblings in my own journal. In a way, I was following that. The big step for me came when I had four books, and then my life circumstance changed, and I said, what am I doing with them? And at that point, it was like, let me do some research. Let me do some inquiry about the market. Let me see if there's a way to fit my therapeutic training with these writing and into a market. And I was still in South Africa, but I knew I had won the green card lottery, and I knew I was coming to live in America. And it was like, wow, I got this whole space opening up for me. What do I want to do when I get there?
Got it. You know, one of the things that came up for me when I was preparing for today is I started thinking about when I was a little girl, my mother read to me a book called The Adventures of Nip and Tuck, and about these two little fairies and the adventures that they went on. And what I'll tell you, Andrew, Andrew, is that that book made such a difference in my life. My mother would read it to me throughout my life. And when I turned 50, my mom gave me that book. And which was bittersweet, because I knew that it was good and bad, because my mother was ill with ovarian cancer at the time. And I knew her giving me the book was a signal that, you know, because that book was a book her grandmother had read to her as a child. Mm. And on my mother's final days, I'll get teared up talking about this out loud, but my mother asked me to read her the book, to read the book to her, and I did. And it was one of those moments in my life that I will never forget. And I will never forget my mother looking at me after I finished making my way through it, you know. She said, you know, I am the luckiest woman in the world. Yeah. And I just think that it's the power of stories that makes such a difference in that connection between parents and children, or anyone who's reading the story. And as I share that with you, what's different about your storybooks from other storybooks? Because obviously there's a number of storybooks out there. Everybody has their favorites from childhood, et cetera. But what about these? And maybe even for today's children, and why do you think maybe there's a different story that needs to be told?
Well, you know, within each of my stories, firstly, there's a structure in the way the book has been laid out that is designed to help parents make connection with their kids. We know that in today's world, the screen time pulls us very quickly away from connection. We don't have, the modern day village looks very different to the village of old. And so each book starts with a breathing practice, four simple breaths that we call the snuggle breathing meditation. And those lines, which you would do slower than I'm gonna do now, but you'd say, I breathe for me, I breathe for you, I breathe for us, and I breathe for all that surrounds us. And if we go through those one breath at a time, what happens is we create the I-thou relationship in the gestalt, and then the we arises between us as well. So each of us has our own place. The connection between us gets honored. And breathing, paired breathing, is the fastest way to create connection. If I just sit here and go, like, did you take a breath?
Yeah.
It's like you almost can't help yourself but to take that breath.
It takes on a meditative quality at that point as well, or what gets released?
Well, yes. I mean, we could say meditative. I want to categorize. It's a mini meditation. For me, it's like a moment of dropping in. It's like, I just come present, and that's what breath and all of the great meditation practices that are sort of spiritual practices that use breath are all about creating presence. So, you know, this is just coming into the body, coming into this moment, being right here. And when we do that with our kids, they get the best of us, right? And we get the best of them. So there's a real...
Really become kids, present.
They come present, and they've got such a great radar for congruency and congruency of words and language. And so if we're saying to them, look, I want you to be wind down time, be calm and go to sleep, and I'm doing that from an agitated state inside of me.
Because right, I just need you to go to bed.
I need to go to sleep so that I can have my glass of wine and, you know, and watch Netflix. You know, it's like it's just never going to work, right? So just for those moments to say, okay, hold on a second. Let's come and let me calm my system so that I can model to you a calm system. And then together we can come to the story. Now the story, my stories have got these, you know, you mentioned the hug who got stuck. Says right here on the back, teaching children to access their heart and get free from sticky thoughts. Apart from the breathing practice at the start, we've got a little reflection page at the end, and this story is about hugs. So we have a hug meter where you get to count how many hugs you had in your day. And I'm working thematically here with a sense of safety, sense of feeling loved and belonging. So if we look into our day behind us and go, hey, who did we give hugs to? And we look forward and we go, who are we giving hugs to tomorrow? Then during night, we have a continuity of connection and care. It's not like that night doesn't become this isolating experience, which, you know, if we've got any night fears, that that could set us up. Does that make sense for you?
Yeah, and then your ideas for your, so how many books have you done at this point?
There are 12 in the collection with two coming brand new stories coming out now. And that's The Girl with Waterfall Eyes. This is our first mock-up copy. And we are Circle People.
Circle People. I love it. Our mastermind groups are called Victory Circles. So I like that.
Yeah, we want to sit close enough to...
I'm sorry. What are the stories behind those books? What is the message?
Well, the Circle People story is helping children to find connection and belonging in the modern day village. It's this recognition of a visitor who arrives into the square village where everything's very neat and organized, but the heartfelt connection is missing. And everybody's got sort of slightly pointed corners. And through the visitor arriving and introducing and reminding folk of the healing beauty of circles, then those pointed edges soften. And the villagers come back into connection with each other. The Girl with Waterfall Eyes, you know, she's still teaching me what she's about as a story. She's a mythical tale of this girl who walks on the earth, very carefully keeping her own balance and the balance of the world. And in the middle of the night, she falls off the world and goes tumbling out through the galaxies. No spoiler alerts for what happens in the end, but she... She sees beauty everywhere she goes. And so she gets to model for us the beauty that we are and the beauty of the world around us, even in that dark and difficult moment where she's tumbling out through the galaxy, seemingly not connected. So I think that this is going to be a great hit, particularly with the little girls, obviously, on the story.
And do you use the same illustrator through all the books, or do you change out your illustrators?
I work a lot with two illustrators over time, because the first book was written in 2010, as I explained. It's like it's taken some time and relationships have moved. But Alexis Aronson is, I think she's done 6 or 7 books in the collection now. She's illustrated both of these two stories. And then Liesl Bell is another illustrator who did the Laughing Witch and the Elephant Who Tried to Tiptoe, it's an absolute a favorite in our community. That elephant's not being herself when she's trying to tiptoe. She compares herself to all the other animals in the wild. And then she realizes, wait, I got some of my own special features and I'm cool just the way I am. And that's right, reminding kids to love themselves the way they are and with the body that they have. And we all need that reminder from time to time. Those self-judgments are very quick to surface.
Absolutely. Do you find that when you see the illustrations for the first time, it brings a whole new life to the book in your own eyes as the writer?
Yeah, absolutely. It's the most exciting part of the process for me. I've got some ideas of what might happen in a scene, but I don't know who the character is yet. And I mean, you know, watching that elephant to try to tiptoe, I worked with 3 different illustrators doing character development until the right illustrator with the character landed. And it was like, there's our Ellie, and it was such an exciting moment. Make her sing, make her twirl. Let's see what she can do, right? She's arriving out of nowhere.
What do you want to see the long-term effects of these books to be in general, and then specifically around the area of courage for children?
My hope for the world is that children can feel safe to be themselves. To do that, they need to feel loved. They need to feel like they're part of something and that they belong. And I believe that we can set our brain up every night with this kindness practice in the last 20 minutes of the day when we connect. Kindness practice. Yeah, well, it is a kindness practice. It's a connection practice, but it just... Kids say the darndest stuff right at the end of the day. That's when they open up. That if parents are ready for that surprise, then they'll expect the unexpected, and have time and space to meet those big questions, you know, about life or the sharing of the bullying or whatever it was that's been happening. And when that happens, our kids get to wake up into that sense of safety, you know, those mornings where we get out of bed and it's like, hey, it's going to be a great day. And I haven't yet run a story about, oh God, oh, it's going to be, that's what I want. And it's really possible to influence our thinking towards that. When you frame it in terms of courage, a child who is connected with their own inner innocence will act fearlessly. Will almost not need to find courage because they'll be following their own natural impulse. And then at the same time, there is a place for courage where, you know, the parents can really model and support children to feel empowered to try little things, see what happens. Some work, some don't work. I have the same issue. Some stories are going to work. Some stories are going to be bestsellers. Some are just going to be on the B list forever. But I don't know which ones are going to take that place. And I have to have the courage to write what I'm inspired to write. And I'd like for children to feel the same process, that they have the courage and the permission to take a step into the world, to try something, and if it doesn't work out, to do it all over again and enjoy the process.
I love how you shared, I listened to your TED Talk, that you talked about how as a child yourself, you stayed up with the babysitter and had just the opposite happen by watching something that really scared you and affected you deeply because of it. Do you want to talk about that a little bit, like the opposite, if that doesn't happen?
Yeah, well, what happened in that circumstance, as I ran from the lounge, having scared the bejesus out of myself with meeting death, really, as a 5-year-old, I came face to face with death, and I sat very alone in my bedroom, very, very scared, and I went to sleep very scared that night, and I couldn't tell my parents what had happened because I shouldn't have been awake, and I shouldn't have been watching television, so there was this sort of double bind situation, I don't want to be over dramatic when I say this. It was a way that I self-identified. For me, that day was the day that my happiness died. And I felt that I changed so significantly in that moment. And it took a lot of therapeutic work in my 30s. And it was fascinating because I couldn't even go back and touch the story in my memory. It was so scary.
And how old were you
when I did the repair work?
When it happened?
I was 5.
5. Okay.
Yeah, and I did the repair work when I was 35. So for 30 years, this was carried inside my system, in some way. Obviously, it's coming out as a gift to the world because of my fascination with the last 20 minutes. But that's the sort of consequence that can be subtly happening. My parents have both passed. I don't think I ever discussed this with them. They will never have known of this moment in my life. There's a possibility that if they had drawn in closer, and if I had felt a little more connected and a little more connection, that I might have opened up to share this experience.
The safety to be able to share the experience. Right. Yeah.
And it might have been resolved in, you know, at a much younger age. That's kind of the hope. The hope is that as adults, our role is to create the environment in which the sharing can take place. We don't have control as to whether or not it's actually going to take place. But if we can see, I was so surprised that nobody saw how much I changed because I felt the change so significantly inside of me. I really would have thought somebody would have come and said, hey, you look like you're struggling with something. And we want the story time allows us to do that. Instead, here we are, we're talking face to face. But when we hold up a book and we sit together, like you're next to me all of a sudden, and we go upside down, we go into the story together. This side by side posturing allows a softening that into which conversation comes up. It's less daunting than a direct, hey, how are you? How was your day?
Tell me everything.
I have to know, because otherwise I'm not a good mum, right? And this is some of the parenting anxieties that that are very beautifully founded on love, and then let you use story time to create the opening where that narrative can come out.
Fantastic. I just love what you're doing, and I am delighted that our paths have crossed to learn more about it. I want to switch a little bit over now to the business model, right? So you've definitely done something different than traditional publishing, and even the way that you're building community around these books, you're even making it a deeper experience. And I know this week you just started with the Kickstarter explain to our audience how you've gone about making this happen.
Right. So, I mean, it's worth rolling back to 4 years ago when I went off to look at the book industry. I went to the Frankfurt Book Fair, which is 8 football stadiums worth of publishers. And I said, hey, I've got these books. And nobody paid any attention. And so I thought, well, everybody else had books too. So I went into a strategy process at that time, which started with me asking, who do I serve? Looking a little bit at what are the aspirations of the community that I serve and their values, and how do they align with my values? Because it's all very well identifying a market need, but if it doesn't, if I'm the sort of person that I have to be motivated on a daily basis towards a cause, and so I could see it at a very early stage then that the major publishers needed to sell sort of 100,000 copies of a book in order to survive. I thought, well, I don't really need that. What I need is to know that at the beginning of the month, I've sold 1,000 books that month. And if we could sell 1,000 books each month, that logistically speaking, there would be a sound business model there. And so part of the operational management question came from that perspective of going, well, I just want a simple platform that I can write into and have people interested in. And then when I looked at my work in healing and my history in that, and the interest in the last 20 minutes of the day became a lot clearer. I also felt that for parents who want to parent in this, I'm cautious about the term conscious parenting, because I don't know what's unconscious parenting, but parents who want to work with similar values to what I'm writing about, want to have them in their home. If they bought all of my books all at once, the kids would eat them up in like 15, 20 minutes, and they'd be on the shelf, and it would become like a New Year's resolution that by the 30th of January has been forgotten. So let me support the intention over a longer term period. And that's why we've created the Book of the Month Club, so that, you know, you can have a new book arrive, which is of course very exciting and lots of fun, coloring in sheets, reminder magnets, stickers, all of the good things. And then, you know, you can read that book for a couple of nights and maybe it disappears back onto the bookshelf. But another book's going to come in 30 days time. And so you get a whole year's worth of your intention to parent in this particular way, and the support with that. And now as our Book of the Month Club grows, we've got our first community ambassadors who are helping out with the launch on the Kickstarter. They've been coming and hanging out with me on Zoom calls and doing story time and sharing ideas, which is something I've always dreamed of. It's like, this is super exciting. I'm falling back on my Habitat for Humanity days when I love the community development in South Africa. These are things that I thrive in. You'll always find me traveling from community to community, because that's what nourishes me. And I mean, there's no doubt that I'm the kind of the lead character in this Circle People story as well, because there's this visitor from a faraway place. I'm like, oh, it might be me. Let's have a circle, everybody.
So the idea of the ambassador program is to get a single source of someone in a community to help spread the word within that community. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Well, one of the things I find very dry in business is email marketing and building sales funnels and trying to make people do things because of a click of a button. And I don't think that's I know that in some places that's how people work, but I'm relationship driven, clearly. And so this for me is about an opportunity to share a little bit more deeply. We understand that our ambassadors want to know more about what motivates me, what's in the stories, what the illustrators have seen, as opposed to the person who first meets the collection on a bookshelf or at an event might just want a book. So we have these sort of these levels of depth and intimacy, which is true for every relationship. And I want to nurture that because it feels warm and fuzzy. But it's also how I would like to see communities growing. And I go to a lot of schools and I travel and I do school visits. And for example, the Montessori community has a very coherent, very collective, warm and fuzzy. Doesn't matter which school I go into. They're following a single person's educational style and teaching. And so everybody who becomes a teacher there has aligned with that vision and value. Now, when we go into other schools, and particularly in the public school sector, that central vision and value doesn't exist in quite the same way. But there are many teachers who are looking for, who espouse the values of, what we're sharing, what other thought leaders like Dr. Becky Bailey and the conscious discipline movement. And those teachers need nourishment. They need to know that they're not crazy to want to sit and take a few breaths in the classroom. because they will be made to feel crazy in certain environments. That's mm-hmm. not how we teach. That's not what we do. It's like we teach curriculum, and it's like no. You're a role model at the front for behavior, and your external language will become the internal language of the child. And so we have to support teachers as well in giving them the tools to talk about things that they may not yet have learned about themselves. And I think that's when I look at like The Hug Who Got Stuck, and it's a book all about the web of sticky thoughts and hugs trying to get out of the hug factory and getting caught in negative self-beliefs. I can write about that because of my therapeutic background and my personal development that I've done within myself, so I can see it. If a teacher hasn't had the years of living yet or the life circumstance to have had to do that self-inquiry, then they won't yet have the narrative to be able to teach it and model it to the kids. So the books become a tool that they can use, whether it's parents or teachers alike.
And so are most of your ambassadors teachers or?
No, we've got a real mix. Teachers and parents, yeah.
And parents, okay, cool. Very cool. And then, if somebody wants to know more about the Kickstarter program itself that's happening right now, as we record this podcast, I know people will be listening to this podcast many months from now, but right now here in September of 2018, where can they go to and how can that happen for them?
Okay, so for September 2018, from today forward through till the 27th of September, We have a crowdfunding launching. The URL for that is consciousstories.com/launch. And that'll take you directly into the campaign where we've got an introduction to these two new stories. We've got me doing a ridiculous outtake of pretending I'm Mr. Rogers. So you mentioned Rogers, author of
Spencer. That's why that song came into my head.
Like Mr. Rogers, like if I was Mr. Rogers, I would sing you a song. And that's how it starts. You have to go and watch me sing it. You know, I didn't grow up with Mr. Rogers. What an amazing movie to watch that one, To Be My Neighbor.
It's on my list. I have not had the chance. I loved Mr. Rogers growing up. Yeah.
He's great. So, yeah, I mean, consciousstories.com is the center for everything here. Our books are available one at a time or in a Book of the Month Club. But the crowdfunding now will be like a pre-order process for delivery in November. And that's, you know, we launched a day ago, and we're 25% towards our target already.
So, fantastic! Congratulations.
We had an amazing start, and what this does for a small business like mine is to help get the print run done in China. So this is basically the funds go straight into us creating inventory. Obviously, we get to fulfill our first round of orders, which is very exciting. We get our first readers of a new story. Which is always a little nerve-wracking for the creative and me. Everybody gonna like it. I hope it's okay. And you speak about courage. This is the sort of courage that a creative needs to be willing to face. Anyone who's going out is going, we're gonna put something into the world. Is the world gonna like it? And there's this pregnant pause where we have to wait and see. And the return comes.
If someone wants to go ahead and become part of the community before these new books come out, they can go to your website and just sign up, right? Is that correct?
Right. Yeah. So the Book of the Month Club one can start at any stage. Everybody gets the same book in the same month. So you join the stream where it's happening. You can just put an email in our newsletter sign up box, and that'll start to get you the information on what's happening. And it might be that your little one's only a year old and you want to wait another couple of years before it's right. That's great. Stay in touch with us. We'd love to.
Fantastic. So again, that's consciousstories.com that people would go to.
As always, Instagram and Facebook are our two strong social media platforms. And that's under both of the handles are Conscious Bedtime Stories. And
great. Yeah. I follow you guys on Instagram. Love that Instagram. A great platform. So as we wrap up here, I could ask you questions all day long, I think, but we'll wrap this up for now. What has really been your greatest reward to date? This whole adventure that you've been on, and is there anything else that you want to share with our audience before we say goodbye?
You know, the rewards come in different ways. Little rewards that happen often are being behind a vending booth at an event and watching somebody be moved by one of the stories. And that happens every time we set up at somebody's deeply affected. I hear, very often, you know, wow, where were these when I was younger? And it's a very sweet, that's a little bittersweet, but that's fun. And then one of my favorite moments of all time, because I saw it coming, but I didn't know how to get there, was reading The Hug Who Got Stuck to 1,000 teachers at a conference and having them all hug. And it was just so great. And there's a cell phone out there on the website somewhere. watching compassionate teachers want to improve their interpersonal relational skills with the kids that they work with is just so nourishing, because it's like a reparenting for me, and it's hope for the future when I see that going out there.
And it just gives you that fire to keep going, right? I mean, to do another book and another book and another book.
Yeah, And you know, that's what, that's ironically also what I would leave with your community, that to really trust your first creative impulse, let it breathe, let it live unedited. Even if it's, you know, if it's not writing, the edit, you know, take the editing as a metaphor. You know, if you're thinking of doing something, you know, play with it and explore and have fun. And I mean, that's how I got to be where I am now. That's how these stories got to be what they are. It was only ever one step at a time, and the first step is invariably a creative spark or an idea or an impulse. And I know that our critical mind is very quick to go, oh no, that won't work, or to see the problems in it. But my invitation is to create a little gap in between the impulse and the critical mind, and just let it, you know, let it breathe a little, let it live. And and do that with your kids, whether you're creating stories together at home, because so many parents do that and have so much fun with it, or whether you're in your business working out just what the next piece is.
Fantastic. Andrew, thank you so much for being with us here today. And to our audience, what I would love to say to you is take these words to heart that Andrew said and pick up a copy of one of these books, and it will really, even if you have it, like, I want to get one just to put on my desk for inspiration, right? And especially the hug one, to remember to do those hugs. If you know of someone who can benefit from this information, whether they're a parent or a kid at heart, please share this podcast with them, and we will see you next time on The Courage to Be the Difference.